to roll with the punches.
Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio. Kind of an unorthodox show tonight. Our erstwhile engineer came down with a set of the humbledubda. I don't know what happened to him, but he ain't here. And so he'll be fixing this all up later. But we're here. We're brought to you by Local 150, Sheehy Funeral Home, Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, Fox's Pizza, Flood Brothers, Guinness is good for you, and Chicago Firefighters Local 2. For those of you who aren't aware, we're on the show every Saturday night, WSBC, 1240 AM from 7 to 8 PM. Also podcast on HibernianRadio.org. And we're also streaming live online from 7 to 8 Saturday nights on Global Irish Radio. That's GIR.IE. Tonight's guest is the great Chicago Ridge Detective Jim Davey. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Got a lot of great pre-publicity on you being quite the character. So where do you live now? Do you have to live in Chicago?
No, I live in Oquon. But Chicago Ridge is about a 6-iron from my house. So close enough. If they can annex my block in, maybe I can be the chief one day.
Oh,
I don't want to be the chief.
Now, you were at Burbank first, right?
Yes.
Let's go back a little bit. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Ashburn, 77th and Trumbull, down the street from Dooley Park.
And,
you know, we could smell the cookies from the Nabisco, and the wind was blowing in the right direction.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, sure.
And so I went to St. Denis. We walked every day. I can count on one hand the amount of times my parents picked us up, where my kids get driven to school every day.
Oh, sure.
We walked. You know, I sound like my grandpa walking up hills both ways, but that's the way it was. We walked, and it was about a mile across two busy streets. You know, these kids now, they can't cross the street without a crossing guard, but we managed to do it.
Speaking of which, four of your daughters, are all four daughters here tonight?
No, three out of four. One is not feeling well.
Who's here?
Taylor is here.
Taylor's 22.
She'll be 22 on Friday.
Hey, actually. Happy birthday, Taylor.
Yeah. Lindsay will be...
Hey, you're 22? You look like you're 12. That's a compliment, believe me.
Lindsay is will be 19 in 2 weeks.
Where's Lindsay?
Lindsay's in
How
yellow.
How you doing, Lindsay? Okay.
And then Tori is not here. She just turned 18.
So you got to be Audrey.
That is Audrey. She'll be 15 on September 15th, her golden birthday.
Did you know your dad said you're four of the most wonderful, beautiful girls on the planet?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was... We put that in your bio.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Well, it's true. They're good kids. I'm lucky.
All right, so you're a third generation police officer, kind of. Your great grandfather was a Chicago police officer, and then you skip a generation to your dad was a cop?
Yeah, my dad did 30 plus years in the city, some of it on disability. He got hurt chasing some bad guys and shattered his elbow, had a couple surgeries. But he did retire with 30 plus years in the city, most of which was in the 18th district.
Yeah. Is he still with us?
Yeah, he's good. Yeah, my parents just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary.
What's your Tom Senior?
Yeah, and we went to Punta Cana. The whole family.
Punta Cana?
In the Dominican Republic.
Oh wow!
We had a blast. There's six kids in my family. Four of us went with my folks and our significant others, and it was a good time.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, there was a lot of drinks.
Yeah.
Mucho cervezas, as they say in the native tongue.
And your older brother Tom Junior is a tax sergeant in 05.
In the 5th district, yeah.
And you have numerous uncles and cousins that are both current retired cops and firemen. Yeah, this is good. You're right up our alley in this show. Well, one of the reasons we do this show is to honor our Irish first responders because we feel they are the modern day equivalent of our mythological Irish warriors. So, and we were just talking about, and let's say a silent prayer for Ella. What's your last name? Ella French.
It's French, yeah. Not, French. Not Fitzgerald.
Yeah, that's what Brown...
Thanks, Superintendent.
Ella French, who was murdered earlier this week. What a tragedy. And these are tough times. Tough times for the police. That's another reason we do the show. So let's go back. So you're at St. Denis, and then you went on to St. Lawrence,
Viking, yeah.
Did you play football or basketball?
I played football freshman and sophomore year. And then I tried out for the baseball team. I thought I was really good, but, you know, St. Lawrence has got a really good baseball team, so not so good there. And then I played basketball 1 year, and then realized I wasn't tall enough. And but I was fast. It was about 100 pounds ago.
So join the club.
I ate that guy, you know, as they say. But I ran track for the last 3 years and did fairly well.
Did you really?
Yeah, I was fast. My brother used to say I was the fastest track guy in the neighborhood.
But, oh, no kidding.
Yeah, but not anymore. Now if I can't hit him with the car door, they're not getting stopped.
Well, you can just take out your gun and shoot him.
Well, they frown upon that, I guess.
Okay. So you first went to... You wanted to be a teacher at first, and you said, maybe not. Right?
Well, I think initially, at first, I was going to be in radio.
No kidding.
Actually worked. I worked for campus radio doing sports.
At
Illinois State, yeah. Yes. And then I got a job at 101.5 FM WBNQ, the Twin Cities Choice for the Hits.
Oh, cool.
I did some weekend overnights, Fridays and Saturday nights, for about a year. Not every weekend, but filling in for when people need vacations.
Yeah.
So when I went into college, I had a criminal justice major and a mass communications minor.
Uh-huh.
And then I switched to an English major, but I kept my communications minor. Okay. I think midway through my freshman year in college, there was so many people in the criminal justice major trying to get classes for the next semester. It was difficult. And I thought, I wasn't doing criminal justice because I wanted to be the police. I was doing it because I thought, I'm going to be in the FBI. And then now I know that the FBI is a bunch of jokes, so can we edit that part out? So I was going to be a teacher then. I was going to teach English. English was always my favorite subject at school.
That's great because you speak it.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's. Then I got to my senior year, and I was doing like some methods teaching, and I think
what's methods teaching?
You have a teacher that watches you. It's not student teaching. It's like you just go for like one class, and you teach a class, and the teacher watches you, and they you know grade you on how you did. You know, as opposed to student teaching, where you're teaching the whole school day. And I hated it. Yeah. It was the school. It was University High School in Normal or Bloomington, Illinois, and. It was just when, like, computers were becoming the thing. So it was a computer-based classroom, and I was teaching a super boring day of sentence diagramming.
Oh, wow.
And I see these kids, you know, at their computers, and I think, wow, I'm nailing this curriculum here. And I walk around, and if there was 15 kids in a class, 10 of them were playing solitaire.
Yes.
So I was like, I don't know about this. So I brought that attention to my teacher helper.
Yeah.
And she said, well, we like to offer an alternative to learning. I was like,
what's that?
I think the alternative to learning is crime, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what that even meant. And so I went home on winter break, and my cousin, who is who worked at Burbank at the time and now is he's now a lieutenant in Oak Lawn.
Yeah.
He said Burbank was testing. And I went back to when I was a criminal justice major, and I'm like, you know what? I could be the police.
The police.
Yeah, and
the police
took the test in Burbank, and I was the first one to get hired off the list. And
terrific.
Here we are, almost 25 years later,
and still
doing it.
And so, when did you switch over to Chicago Ridge?
Right after 9/11, actually, on the 12th of September, when we were on Western on Harlem Avenue, dealing with the rioters. It was probably actually, I'll tell you, the most embarrassing day that I had being a. An American, I can say that, you know, because there was so much white trash hillbillies out on Harlem.
Oh, no kidding.
You know, they were all, you know, anti-Middle Eastern when
they were looking for a fight.
It wasn't their fault. It was a small group of individuals that decided they were going to do that damage, not the people that lived in Bridgeview and Chicago Ridge. They had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And just to see the carnage that happened on Harlem, it was embarrassing.
Oh, no kidding.
But anyway, long story short, I had applied for Chicago Ridge, and I hadn't decided what I wanted to do yet, if I wanted to leave yet. And that night, I saw the chief of police in Chicago Ridge, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to take it. Something had happened in Burbank that made my decision for me about a week earlier. So it was very easy. The chief in Burbank at the time was a very unpleasant individual, and he made it very simple for me to.
Yeah.
You know, I told my ex-wife that I needed something to help me make this decision because I couldn't figure it out. And then that happened. I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Screw this place, you know.
And haven't looked back.
Looked back. Yeah. No. I have a lot of good friends still from Burbank that the guys I'm close with. Actually made a phone call to one of them the other day for my daughter's boyfriend is taking the test in Burbank.
Oh, okay.
To see if,
I just met him.
He can, if he can help him out once he passes the test.
And, yeah.
You know, so I didn't burn any bridges. I left on good terms.
That's
just
good.
It was, you know, I have this rule with myself. I have to protect myself and myself sometimes. And I knew if I stayed there, bad things were going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say something that I would regret to the wrong person and, you know, so.
Okay. Now, one of the things that caught my eye, you were the, what's his name, the Ronnie the Redbird?
No, Reggie the Redbird. Come on.
Okay. And he's the mascot for Illinois State.
He's the greatest mascot in college sports.
Tell me all about it. Tell me all about
it. Well, I had to take, I had 2 hours of classes for my, not the gen eds, the extra ones you could take. I needed 2 hours for my major, and so I took a bowling and billiards class. The guy that was teaching the classes was the moderator for Reggie the Redbird. So I kept, his name was Terry. I want to be Reggie. Now rewinding, my senior year in high school, I was Igor the Viking at St. Lawrence.
Were you really?
So I had this mascot gene in me, apparently.
Oh.
You know, I'm an entertainer, I guess.
Yeah, and so go back to St. Lawrence. So the Viking, does he run up and down the sidelines?
Oh, he's a maniac. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So you like that as
I was, because I was thin and runner then.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I'd fit the Reggie suit perfectly because there's a hula hoop for our waistband and it would fit super snug. But anyway, he finally calls me and he says, hey, I got a cancellation. I need you to go do a thing at a school with Coach Bob Bender, who was the basketball coach at the time.
Of Illinois State.
Illinois State. He left after that season and went to Washington. So I'm like, sure. Meet him at Redbird Arena. So I went to Redbird Arena, got dressed up.
Is that what
up.
They call it? Redbird Arena?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Got dressed up in the suit, and I met Coach Bender, and now I got this big suit, and I got
You met him, you hadn't seen him beforehand?
No, I mean, I knew who he was, because he was the basketball coach. I had never met him before.
But you had to put the head on, right?
I did not have the head. I have the head on yet. I had the suit on, and I got into his car, which was like a Honda Civic or some small hat. I don't know how I fit in it.
Yeah.
And it was raining.
Oh, yeah.
So we get to the school, and I get there, and I thought that I was just going to be there as like a prop.
Yeah.
No, it turns out that now I have the head on. I'm in the school. It turns out that he was going to go do a talk with the teacher.
He's going to leave
the parents,
you.
And I had to entertain all these kids in a
gym.
How
old are the kids?
Oh, like 9, 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Trial by fire.
Right. So the real Reggie, the person that does Reggie all the time, he shoots baskets.
Oh,
he catches
yeah.
passes.
Yeah.
Now the head, the eyes are like on the side. So you only look through one side. So it's very difficult.
Yeah.
So now I got balls bouncing off my face.
Oh, they're throwing them at you.
Catch the ball, Reggie. I'm taking shots. I'm nowhere near it. And they start booing me.
Oh, wow.
All these little kids booing me. So one little kid.
This is your big audition.
And I'm wet in this suit still from the rain.
Oh, yeah.
This kid comes up and hugs me, and he's like, it's okay, Reggie. It's going to be fine. And then he goes, sniffles, takes 2 steps back, and he screams, oh, my God, the bird stinks. Get him a bird bath. The costume smelled so bad.
Oh,
it was. Like, you know, like when you
all the sweat.
When you leave your clothes in the washing machine and don't put them in the dryer, that musty, foul odor, that's what it smelled like. So that was my first experience with Reggie.
And then, but you continued.
But they asked me back, and
I
did the entire season of the women's college basketball season, and I did better. I made a few baskets. I was able to catch balls.
So you're on the sidelines of the women's basketball team. Okay.
Yeah, and the Lady Redbirds won the Missouri Valley that year.
Did they really? But yeah.
I'd like to think that I had something to do with it.
Sure you did. You excited them.
Yeah, and I energized the 437 fans that showed up to the games.
That's great. And so that you've hung up the career on that kind of stuff.
I mean, have I? I'm going to retire in about 7 years. At least I have something to fall back on.
Okay.
I can go to radio. I can take your job.
Yeah, easily.
Maybe
easily.
Southpaw for the White Sox. Who knows?
Well, that's where I was going.
Yeah. Probably more like Ribby or Rhubarb. Yes. But.
I always felt bad for those guys.
Yeah, even though my brother convinced me that was Reinsdorf and Einhorn in those costumes.
Oh, yeah. He convinced you?
It would make sense, though, wouldn't it?
Yes. Your brother. How old were you when he talked to you into this?
I don't know, 85, 12?
You know, that's Reinsdorf and Einhorn. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, I always felt bad for those guys. All right, so you take us through. Now, you're working on a cold case now, right?
Yeah, there was
a homicide.
There was a homicide in Chicago Ridge, May 31st.
Give me the boundaries of Chicago Ridge.
Well, they're kind of staggered, but roughly Central Avenue to Ridgeland from 111th to 107th.
Okay.
Central to Harlem, then all the way to 99th Street, a little bit back in the area behind the mall.
Yeah, it's all about the mall.
Yeah,
right?
We stagger in and out. We border Oaklawn, Worth. Bridgeview, Palos Hills, where it's probably about, I don't know, 3.5 square miles.
Oh, wow.
16,000 people.
16,000 people.
Yeah, but it's the strangest border. When I was new there, the only way I knew that I was in Chicago Ridge was when the street signs changed. I knew that Oakland had different street signs in Chicago.
Oh, the different color signs, yeah. So where was the homicide in Chicago? What happened?
It happened at 106th and Mason, May 31st, 1978.
Oh, wow.
She was married, fifth grade, only child, fifth grader. She's home alone, and the husband was trying to call her. She wasn't answering. Sent the mother-in-law to check on her and found her bludgeoned and murdered in the basement.
Wow. In Chicago Ridge.
Yes. So actually, 2 years ago, we reopened it back about 4 years ago. But 2 years ago, we actually let everybody know that we reopened it. And the Tribune did a real nice article.
Oh,
about
yeah.
It. But
looking for tips, basically.
Well,
yeah.
See if anybody remembers anything. But we at that time and still now, we have a very good idea of who is involved.
Ah.
We believe that, obviously, without going into too much detail,
It's
still open.
Yeah.
We flew out to Vegas to re-interview the husband.
Oh.
You can draw your own conclusions there.
Yes, okay.
A person that was a friend of his.
How old was the woman when she... She was young.
30, early 30s.
She had a 30s, fifth grader.
Young 30s.
The
person of interest, we believe, was a friend of the husband's, a co-worker of his.
Wow.
He puts himself at the scene.
Yeah.
And we've narrowed the time frame down from the time that we know she's dead and the time that he says he's left to about 8 to 10 minutes.
Wow.
We think that it's a case that should go to the grand jury.
Yeah.
And we're working with the Cold Case Unit State's Attorney's Office. Ultimately, they will make that decision. Cold Justice, the TV show, reached out to us. They wanted to do a show about it. And after we sent
Cold
them,
Justice, yeah.
Yeah. We sent them all of our evidence and everything that we've done, all our interviews with suspects and witnesses and everything. And the producers of that show, who they've done hundreds of episodes, cannot believe that Cook County has not.
That doesn't surprise me.
I mean, doesn't surprise me at all.
State's attorney.
Yeah, she's doing
Kim
a fine
Fox.
Job. Yeah. Got reelected too.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
it's
way
crazy.
To go. I mean, the people in Cook County.
We had a party here for Pat O'Brien when he was running.
Yeah. A good friend of mine is a judge who was real close with Pat O'Brien, and I went to a couple fundraisers, and it's just unfortunate that the people in Cook County are so blind and afraid.
It is.
You know, the Madigan machine, whatever you want to call it. You know, Kim Fox, Tony Preckwinkle, they all keep getting reelected, and they're just making things worse.
Lori Lightfoot ain't making it any better.
She doesn't really affect me, because I don't live in Chicago, but I do have family in Chicago, and she's just a disgusting human.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I agree.
She is, you know.
Yeah, and a racist, big time.
She really is.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's not your only case, is it, or is it?
No, I mean, that's the only cold case that I'm working on.
Okay.
Actually, no, it's not. I have another cold case that we just sent off some more DNA to a lab from an infant that was found in a garbage recycling dump
in Chicago Ridge
in May of, we went to Disney. It was the day I was leaving for Disney. Was it 2013, girls?
Wow.
Yeah. May of 2013, because of all the advancements in DNA now, we sent all the evidence that we had back to the lab.
How old was it? A 1-month-old baby?
Newborn.
Oh, a brand newborn baby. Yeah.
And the problem with that case is that the medical examiner, after Dr. Runkumar, who is, I could not say more good things about her.
Yeah.
After looking at the case, she said that she believes that the child was born and was breathing.
Yes.
But she can't say that definitively.
Yeah.
So it would be very difficult to prove that it's a homicide.
Yeah.
As opposed to just discarding human remains, which is the difference between felony and misdemeanor.
Oh, yeah.
But
it's only a misdemeanor? Wow.
But if we can identify who the mother is through DNA tracing and 23andMe and all that stuff.
Well, it's got to be the mother, I would think.
We would have to interview her, and you know, ideally she says baby was born alive, and then she gets charged. We don't believe that will actually be a Chicago Ridge case because it came on a back of a a sealed container from Wisconsin. It could be from Illinois, Lake County.
You think they maybe just dumped the baby in Chicago Ridge?
No. What happened is it came in the container to the recycling plant.
Oh, my God.
And then got... So the body ends up here, but came from either Northern Illinois or Southern Wisconsin.
Oh, so the recycling center is in Chicago Ridge.
Correct.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's another one. We just reopened that one back in February, and working closely with the Cook County Sheriff's Department because they recently cleared a case similar to ours.
Oh, yeah.
We're working closely with them, and they're going to help. You know, there's going to be a lot of work once we get the DNA profile back.
Yeah.
Because you have to then do family trees and things of that nature.
But, so you get the baby's DNA. Yeah.
We have the baby's DNA.
Oh, okay.
We need to put it in the database to see if there's anywhere in any database where the mother has submitted DNA or where somebody that is related to her. So maybe it's going to be a cousin, but then we have to family tree off that to try to say, okay, we've narrowed it down to these seven people. Let's go interview them. And, you know, it's going to be a long shot. But
do you ever watch Forensic Files?
Oh, I've seen them.
My favorite show. One of my favorites.
Somebody has to advocate for this child.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
So we do the best we can, but sometimes...
No, you're doing God's work. There's no question about it. Yeah. One of my other favorite shows is The First 48.
Yes.
That's a great show.
Not always factual.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I work homicide cases.
That's right. Well, tell me about it.
Arrested people after 48 hours.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Well, it's in Tulsa and a couple other cities. And,
yeah. I mean, it's a good show. Of all of the police reality shows, it's the most realistic and the one that you actually, as an investigator, you can learn something from to see some of the techniques that the investigators use.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I do find myself like, I wouldn't have done that or, you know, whatever. But you can Monday morning quarterback all you want. At the end of the day, if you get the bad guy, who cares how you get him?
Well, you know, one of the things I noticed about that show is it's all about the cameras now. They're everywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's a lot of times how
that's what the policemen need to remember, too.
Well, the police, go find the cameras. Yeah. Because it's like they didn't have those in the good old days. So
I remember being in the police academy.
Yeah.
And them saying that... I'm going to do my best Homer Simpson impersonation in a second. But
good. I thought you were already doing it.
Be careful. Be careful out there because people have cameras on their cell phones. And we're like, this magic cell phone camera. You know, and here we are. Now everybody has them.
Yeah. You're talking into one right now. Yeah. do you specifically work in homicide then?
No, we're a small department. We handle everything. We get financial crimes. We have a mall. So
are there a lot of bars in Chicago Ridge?
We have quite a few, but our bars police themselves for the most part. They know if they get a ding, they'll lose their liquor license.
Oh, so yeah. Yeah, they don't want that.
We had a few incidences, and we've managed to put some people in jail for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a kid that was just found unconscious in the middle of Ridgeland Avenue.
Wow.
And the bouncer was one of the people that beat him up. And the bouncer and another guy were both charged with felonies. And obviously they pled out and did some jail time or EM or whatever. So, you know, didn't get what they deserve. But, you know, once they're arrested, I can't control what the state's attorney's office does with them. So.
Oh, tell me about it. Well, that's because you're in Cook County. Yeah. Well, you know, these are tough times for cops. What's your take on that? I mean, do you think we're going to see a light at the end of the tunnel?
Sure hope so.
Yeah.
I really do. Because this is my take on it, is that the majority of society loves and respects the police. The amount of people that come up to me and thank me. And, you know, it does, as we sit here next to me with a Vietnam veteran, where people come up to me and say, thank you for your service.
Right.
I'm not doing that service. Thank you for my service is for somebody that fought in a war gave us the freedom we deserve.
Well, you're fighting in a war.
To a certain extent. Yeah. But, you know, thank you for what you do, things of that nature. I appreciate that.
Yes.
But like I said, the majority of people feel that way.
Yeah.
The problem is the minority have the bigger voice.
Yes, the vocal
minority. And they have the politicians
minority.
Behind them.
And the media.
So, I mean, when did all this police rhetoric and hatred start?
Yes, just about 2 years.
About January of 2009.
Yes, oh, okay, January 2009.
Who was elected president?
Obama!
Yeah. That's when it started.
Yes.
When him and Eric Holder said to the people, you don't have to listen
to
the
right.
police.
Yes.
If the police tell you to take your hands out of your pockets, yes, you do.
Yes.
Take your damn hands out of your pockets because I got a family and I, you know.
The country became much more racially divided because of Obama.
And then post George Floyd, it's even worse.
Oh, what a piece of crap he was.
I saw today, I was watching the Sox game.
Yeah.
And on the right field in Minnesota, it says George Floyd, 1973 to 2020.
I think he was this great hero.
Let me tell you.
What a piece of crap.
The guy should not have died the way he died.
I'm not so sure about that.
That was awful. I did not. That was bad police work. That Derek Chauvin got what he got.
Yeah.
But George Floyd was a piece of shit.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to have to bleep that. What's that? What do we have here? 26-35, Billy. Okay. Yeah. But I agree on that.
Yeah. You know, he puts a gun to a woman's belly.
Pregnant woman.
And, you know, like, come on. This is not...
No,
a good person.
Not at all.
Right? Did he deserve to die the way he died? No.
Yes.
But would he have died anyway? Probably.
Oh, yeah. He had OD'd.
So,
he practically did.
I don't know.
They are saying he died from an overdose anyway. That's what I heard anyway.
The thing about that, though, and I'll be brief on this, is that at that time, that was a time when everyone to a man was on the same page that this is not the way that the police are supposed to act.
Right.
But the left wants a division. Because they can't have their agenda if there's not division.
Exactly.
So they created all of that mess. And the peaceful protests and all that nonsense, we all know it wasn't peaceful.
Yes, absolutely. That's an oxymoron, peaceful protest. Yeah.
So let's move on.
But, okay. But you don't have to encounter much of that in Chicago Ridge.
No. I mean, obviously, you know, we do get the negativity still. You know, not to the extent that the
just because you're a cop.
Getting.
Yeah.
You know, it's that... You know, I'm still proud of my profession.
Absolutely.
But I probably carry... I didn't always carry off-duty. I picked my spots where I was going to be.
Yeah.
But I think I carry off-duty a lot more now because...
I don't blame you.
You just never know.
Yeah. You don't ever know. Yeah. You know, one of the things... We've interviewed an awful lot of police officers on this show, and I am, first of all, very proud that they are doing the job that they're doing everything. But by and large, and I ask them all, what's going on? Why would you want to be a cop in this atmosphere? And they say, somebody's got to be the good guy. You got to, and they're doing it because they're out to do the right thing. God bless.
I like to help people.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
I like to help people.
If you have a philosophy, about heaven and hell, you help people. That's where you're going to go. You're going to get. You're going to get a ticket into heaven.
I'm going to be dead, so it doesn't really matter.
You gotta be dead to get there.
Here's the thing, okay? I don't know if it swayed when my first daughter was born, but at a certain point in my life, you realize that you're responsible for other people.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and you have to set an example for them.
Yes.
So, and that's what I try to do, and I think I do a pretty good job.
I think so too. Yeah. And we're glad they're here tonight.
We'll see.
All right. Let me just check this out. Oh, you've been a bike officer. What's that like in Chicago?
No, that was when I was in Burbank.
Oh, okay.
It was fun.
Evidence technician.
Except that the one time with the bike, when I put the siren on and the lights, and the guy looked in his rearview mirror and just drove away, like, I'm going to catch him.
I didn't know the bikes had sirens.
Yeah, the little siren. It had a motor on it. Okay. Got up to about 18 miles an hour.
Well, what's going on in Chesterton, Indiana?
That's part of our cold case. We've been to Chesterton. We've been to Lenark, Illinois. We were in Las Vegas. We've been all over the country re-interviewing people, talking to potential suspects and witnesses. And
well, we have time for one more story, Jimmy. You got one up your sleeve you want to tell me? Maybe a police at work or a funny story or a scary, whatever you want to tell me.
Oh, God, there's too many funny stories.
Think about that while I take a drink from
my daughter. Audrey wants me to tell a story about her, but I don't know that I have any.
Well, we don't want to embarrass your kids.
I'd love to embarrass them. you know, I'm going to tell you the scariest night
that
I had. And it was the week before 9/11. It was actually Labor Day weekend.
2001. Yeah.
December 2nd. Right out of roll call, we get a...
This is at Burbank.
I was in Burbank.
Yeah.
Get a call of a domestic trouble. The husband's locked himself in the garage, and there is the smell of gas.
Oh.
So he was a welder or something. He worked with propane.
Yeah.
So as soon as you pull up, and they can say propane is odorless. It's not.
Yeah.
As soon as you pulled up in the house, you could smell it.
Wow.
Well, he had big, not just the tanks you do with your grill, big tanks And he had them all on. The smell was overwhelming.
Oh, he was trying to bump himself off, basically.
He was in the garage. Our lieutenant, Mike Summers, Archie, we called him. He was talking to him through the garage window.
Yeah.
Okay, standard city.
That stuff's like very window. Flammable, too.
And
right?
I was about 15 feet away, and the subject, he had a flint. He kept flicking the flint, and Archie kept telling him, stop doing that. And over about a course of about 45 minutes, he got him to slowly turn off some of the propane.
Oh, good.
And then all the tanks were off.
Yeah.
But the residual propane was still in the air. He was going to come out of the garage. Had the situation done. He hit the flint one more time.
Oh!
Ba-boom!
The whole garage blew up?
It was...
Holy cow.
Thankfully, this guy had a blight in his yard where he dug up some concrete and put it next to the garage.
Yeah.
Or Archie Summers, myself, and another Burbank officer named Mark Videlli would not be here.
Wow.
Because the concussion of the door, of the side of the garage, all four sides of the garage blew up.
Holy cow.
The garage door went over the neighbor's garage into the yard across the alley.
Yeah.
We hopped the fence, literally put the fire out on these guys with our bare hands.
Wow.
Okay. Dragged them out to the ambulance, got them out there, and didn't realize until after it was over that I had, like, from my right leg, from my knee down, I had half of my pants were gone.
Sure.
So, this is kind of leading into the story of why I decided to leave Burbank. It's a good ending. So, after we get him to the hospital and we get an update that looks like Lieutenant's going to be okay. He's got some very bad degree burns. He was airlifted over to Loyola, but he was going to be okay.
Yeah.
The chief showed up smoking a cigarette.
Oh, my God.
Brilliant, right?
And the propane is...
Yeah. And he walks up to me and... You can see that I have a bandage on, and he says to me, hey, Davey, where's your hat?
Oh, come on.
And I looked at him, and I said, Chief, it's in my effing car.
Oh, yeah.
And I walked away. And right then, I thought, F Burbank,
yeah,
I'm leaving.
Yeah. That's a good story. Wow.
It was scary.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Was it a brick garage or just wood garage?
It was like a standard city bungalow with a detached garage, you know, with the service door and the overhead door and the window with the louvered side windows on it, you know?
Holy cow.
So, yeah, it was scary, yeah.
And how, you guys were like, what, 10 feet away from it when it blew up?
10 to 15 feet.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was bad, yeah. I'll tell you the last part of the story when we're here, so. Because there's a part that's going to definitely get bleeped out of some of the things I said, so we'll just wait until...
Okay, you can tell me later. All right. I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Well,
God bless you.
Me.
You're doing God's work. You're doing a great job. Your family is terrific. This is going to sound great when you listen to it. But thanks so much. And be careful out there anyway. Be careful. I know Chicago Ridge.
Listen, I'm nobody's hero except for four girls that live under my roof.
God bless you. Good for you.
Yeah. I'm going home every day. It's three things I learned. Don't get wet. Don't get hungry. Don't get dead.
Don't get wet?
No. I've been doing this 25 years. The young guys get wet.
Oh, okay. That's great. Give me that again. Don't get wet.
Don't get wet. Don't get hungry. Don't get dead.
Don't get hungry. Okay. That's why not? Yeah, why get hungry when you're hungry?
Clearly, I don't get very hungry.
Oh, yeah. You don't look like you're very hungry. Well, Jimmy Davey, you are a prince.
Thank you.
Thank you
much.
So much. God bless you and to your family. Thank them for coming tonight. And we'll be right back after these messages on Hibernian Radio.
Chicago firefighters first formed an independent firemen's association in 1901. Firefighter delegates met in 1918 at the American Federation of Labor Convention to form the International Association of Firefighters. Chicago, having been the second organization to join the American Federation of Labor, they were designated as IAFF Local 2. Over the next 100 years or so, Local 2 has been tempered through turbulent times and survived to prosper. In 1980, a contentious strike almost split the union, but the Brotherhood of the Barrel prevailed. Today, it's a stronger union because of that, as Local 2 is forever negotiating benefits for their members. Ask any of the members and they will tell you, as the faces of our ranks change over time, the men and women of Local 2 will always stand steadfast in our resolve to aid and assist those who find themselves in dire situations. Our brotherhood is our bond, and we celebrate our differences as a way to better serve the citizens of Chicago and keep each other safe. For more info, go to IAFF2.org.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, The Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch and an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste recycling and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Hey everybody, this is Charlotte Houlihan. Don't touch that dial. My grandpa will be right back some more Hibernian radio. He said something about seeing a man about a horse. Sounds like I'm actually going to get that pony after all.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
On the death walk of saloons that decorate Western Avenue, only the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, the soul of Beverly, sits right on a 50-yard line of Chicago's Southside Irish St. Patrick's Day Parade at 106th and Western. Generations of Southside Irish have quenched their thirst in the Cork, snuggling up to memories of family, faith, and fierce loyalty to friends. It's the jewel of this neighborhood where we celebrated weddings, christenings, wakes, and unforgettable victories. Proprietors Bill Guidy and Mike Fitzpatrick, now celebrating 20 years in business, welcome you home for a cold brew, to share a good story, or help you throw one hell of a party. With over 20 beers on tap and a full bar for your pleasure, this is the spot you can sink a root and get your Irish on. Cork has plenty of seating, from our private event rooms to our 300-person beer garden. Our interior space brings you back to the homeland of Ireland with our vintage photos and authentic Irish decor and Chicago memories of the good old days. So say hello to a stranger, make a new friend, fall in love, or just enjoy the company of people you forgot you knew. The Cork and Kerry continues the Southside tradition parents and grandparents brought here from the old country. Come on by the Cork and Kerry and get some. The Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue, for private parties, just pals hanging out, or intimate cocktail rendezvous. Come on home to the south side of Chicago at the Cork and Kerry.
Hey everybody, your old friend Mike Houlihan. Kind of a crazy night here at Cork and Kerry Irish Pub. Our thanks to Jimmy Davey for being our guest and what a great job he did. It's a crazy night here because Billy Wooten, our engineer, is in places unknown, but the show must go on, right? I want to remind everybody of a couple of things coming up. One of them is on September 11th. I'm very, very humbled and honored that the Emerald Society, the Irish American Police Association of Illinois, has invited me and as to be the 2020 and 2021 Emerald Society Irish Men of the Year. And I don't know how I got that. Maybe from doing this show. But I got to tell you, I'm so excited about it. And I hope everybody can come out, join me in saluting our brothers in blue. God bless them all. It's going to be a great night. Cocktails start at 6 over at Gaelic Park. And then in the Emerald Room, they'll have a wonderful dinner. And Gaelic Park is like the Irish country club. So come on out there. It's a lot of fun. I'll be there with my family and friends, and hopefully my friends on the air will be there with me too. So if you want to get tickets, get in touch with our friend Tim Burns at 773-551-5671. If he doesn't answer, leave a message and your number and he'll call you back and you can get tickets. Tickets are $80 a piece, $800 for a table. All goes to the Emerald Society of Illinois. I don't get a piece of it, although I should have worked out a deal there. But I'm stupid that way. Anyway, God bless them all. It's the 45th annual dinner and award ceremony honoring yours truly, Mike Houlihan. And it's Saturday, September 11th, from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. I don't know if I'm going to still be there at 11 o'clock. I'll probably crash. But anyway, I hope to see you all there. And if you do come, please come over and say hello. And then, coming up after on September 24th, is the 7th annual Irish American Movie Hoolie, over at the Gene Siskel Film Center, 164 North State Street. We just got word today that the Dearborn Tavern over on North Dearborn is going to be sponsoring the movie Hooli, and it's going to be our hangout for us and for all the filmmakers coming in from Ireland. And we got John Connors, and we have John Duddy, the great Irish boxer, his wife Grania. We have Nicola Boyle, all from the film A Bend in the River. John Connors also directed a wonderful film called Endless Sunshine on a Cloudy Day. It's about, you know, if you have a teenage daughter or a younger daughter who's into TikTok and all that crap on the internet, it's all about that, a young Irish gal who kind of got consumed by that, and then, well, it'll break your heart is all I can tell you. It's a terrific documentary and very well done. That's Sunday at 5 o'clock. A Bend in the River is Saturday night, the 25th of September at 8 o'clock at the Gene Siskel Film Center. And then Friday night, opening night, is my film, In Search of Weeping Jim, about Weeping Jim Kearns, the late Alderman James Ambrose Kearns, the father of the Chicago flag, and our search for him in Ireland, County Mayo. And his grandson is my lifelong pal, Denny Kearns. And we traveled all over Ireland finding him, met long-lost cousins. It's just a terrific film. I'm very, very pleased. Probably the best thing I'm ever doing, I'll tell you that. So anyway, that is September 24th, 25th, and 26th at the Gene Siskel Film Center. You'll be hearing a lot more about that, believe me. And then, of course, the trip to Ireland. And that is October 20th to the 27th. Just looking for my flyer on that. But we're going to show the film in Westport. It's going to be the Irish premiere of the film in Westport, October 25th. But we're leaving on the 20th. We're going to Galway for 3 nights. And it's in the midst of their pre-Halloween Machness Festival, which is this crazy, kind of like Mardi Gras. But they have these huge costumes, and it's just a riot. And that's 3 nights in Galway. And then we'll be going all over the place near Galway. And then the 25th, we're driving down to Westport for the premiere of In Search of Weeping Jim. And then we head back on the 26th back to the Fitzpatrick Castle in Killiney, just outside Dublin. It's going to be a blast. It's usually a floating party. My friend Alamo is here tonight. He'll be there too. Denny Kearns will be there. A lot of old buddies will be there. So we hope you can join us. To learn more about it, go to Specialized Travel. Or call our friend Deirdre at 1-800-664-7474. Deirdre Kiley, deirdre.kiley, K-I-E-L-Y, at special-ireland.com. Check out my website. Check it out. It's all over Facebook, too. Return to Ireland with Hooli and Friends, a 7-day tour of Ireland, 10/21 to 10/27. You will not be disappointed. Now, I want to tell you, my old pal Billy, I know you're working on this. Whenever I walk down Western Avenue and I look in the window, Ken's, Rock's, Hearts, or any of those great Irish saloons, I see the ghost of my old pal Jimmy Goff through the mist. And he says to me, "Hey, Hooli, O'Donnell." Patrick O'Donnell, age 81, a native of Kilmacrenan County, Donegal, Ireland. God rest his lovely soul. Patrick was the beloved husband of 53 years to Anne, and the father of Laura Lynn and Janet Lee. God rest his lovely soul, Patrick O'Donnell. Of course, he was waked, and the funeral arrangements were handled by Sheehy's, where other eight people go. Also, William Bill McGrath, age 91, a United States Army veteran in the Korean War, born into eternal life on July 30th. He was the beloved husband of the late Jean McGrath, the father of Peggy, Jeannie, the late Michael, and Tim McGrath. He's a dear brother of the late Joanne, Betty Ann, the late Tom, and Mary Hepburn. Uncle Bill was also loved by his many nieces and nephews. Former vice president of Amsted and Hubble Steel, where Bill made his mark on the coated steel industry. He was a lifelong Notre Dame fan, who loved the St. Patrick's Day parades, and was proud of his Irish heritage. God rest his lovely soul. Bill McGrath, 91. Then, oh, I got two more. Bill Haggerty. For a minute there, I thought it was my pal, but it's not. Bill Haggerty, age 90. God rest his soul. Beloved husband of the late Eileen, devoted father of Eileen, Kevin, Karen, Laura, Ann, Jennifer, and the late William Jr. Loving grandfather of 12, brother of Jerry, Thomas, and the late Richard Haggerty, Mary Caffrey, Alice DeFebo, Teresa Baker, John James, and Joseph Haggerty, Ellen Murphy, and Nancy Murray, son of the late Richard and Alice Nee Cunningham. An Irish wake and visitation, oh, that was Friday, was held out at the Irish Legend is the name of the joint. I think it's in Willowbrook. So God rest his lovely soul, Bill Haggerty. And finally, Father John Foley, a Jesuit, son of the late John and Blanche Foley. He died at St. Camilla's Jesuit Community in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. He was raised in Oak Park, attended St. Giles and St. Edmund's Parishes, graduated from Fenwick High School in Oak Park in 1944. He entered the United States Marine Corps with services in Entwick and action in Okinawa in the last battle of World War II. In 1946, he entered the Society of Jesus at the Novitiate in Milford, Ohio. Learned philosophical and theological studies at the former Jesuit College in West Baden, Indiana. Following his ordination in 1959, he earned a master's degree at Loyola University Chicago and St. Louis University and pursued further studies at the Jesuit School of Theology in Berkeley, California. In teaching and pastoral work, he was assigned to the former St. Xavier High School in downtown Cincinnati. Hey, I went to college there before they kicked me out. And its relocation to Finneytown and at Milford Novitiate St. Mary of the Lake Seminary, St. Ignatius College Prep, Bellarmine Jesuit Retreat House, and Loyola University. This guy got around everywhere the Jesuits were. He was director of the Jesuit Seminary Association, pastor of St. Ignatius Church in Chicago, and served in various positions at Loyola Academy and Wilmette for over 35 years. God rest his lovely soul, Father John J. Foley. Okay, I think we can take a break now. Maybe we'll have a little music and come back for a couple of jokes. So stick around on Hibernian Radio.
We were born before the wind. We were all so young, been a song. Where the bonnie boat was won, we sailed to the misty. Hark now, hear the sailor cry. Smell the sea and you feel the sky. Let your soul and spirit fly into the misty. Oh, when the fog horn blows, you know I will be coming home. Oh, when the fog horn blows, I want to hear it. I don't want to fear it. You know I want to rock your gypsy soul, just like way back days of yore. And together we may flow into the misty. Oh, when the fog horn blows, you know I will be coming home. Oh, when the fog horn blows, I want to hear it. Don't want to fear it. You know I want to rock your gypsy soul, just like way back days of your old. And together we will flow into the misty.
History going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150. When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes are third generation, family owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRock, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff, take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
Hey folks, Charlotte Houlihan here. Did you know that Hibernian Radio is now streaming worldwide on Global Irish Radio? Every Saturday night at 7 p.m. or 1 a.m. in Ireland. Yes, the Irish are always way ahead of us. Check it out at globalirishradio.com or capital GIR.ie.
Southsiders have always known where to get the best pizza on earth, Fox's Pizza. For over a half century, the Fox family has been creating that delicious thin crust za that your mouth will tell you, this can only be Fox's. It's a Chicago Beverly institution at 99th and Western, as well as in Orland Park, where they combine delicious food with an Irish pub ambiance. You got the best of both worlds. Still owned by Tom and Frank Fox, whose mom and dad, Frank and Teresa, bought the Western location from Al Capone's sister back in 1964. They opened the doors in Orland at 73 at 143rd and Ravinia Avenue.
you'll recognize the stone turrets of their Irish castle, whose great times have been celebrated for generations of Chicagoland Irish. Fox's is perfect for the whole family, pickup or delivery, or you can dine in, relax, and have a cocktail with your dinner, whether it's steak, ribs, chicken, or especially pizza. It's all good. Having a party? Fox's also does catering. Call Fox's in Beverly at 773-239-3212 or in Orland Park at 708-349-2111. They're proud sponsors of Hibernian Radio and all Irish first responders. Mention this show for a free toothpick. Gotta love that Fox's Pizza.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Hey everybody, your old friend Mike Houlihan back here with Hibernian Media. We are having a blast here by myself sitting here with the phone. But it's a gorgeous night here at the Cork and Kerry, and thanks to Jimmy Davey and his family for coming out. But as we head down the home stretch, we're going to take a little trip to Hooletown.
Deep in the south side of Chicago.
Get me out of here.
So deep. All the way up to 93rd Street.
Get me out of here, please.
Across the tracks where they only spoke Yaki Dak.
Oh.
And the people barely survived on a strict diet of crunchy bouncer and bamboo.
Hey, man, you want another drink?
Yes.
Can I get you two?
This
yeah.
is almost 70 years we're talking.
70
when
years?
The mix what? His teeth.
Oh.
Something entered his cranium.
His cranium?
And wormed around his frontal lobes and took him to a state of mind.
Mind.
Hidden place on the other side of bunkers.
Welcome, crazy, silly, screwy.
Have a seat.
Known as
Hooletown.
Welcome to Hooletown. Don't stay too long, though.
How come?
Because you might not come back.
Welcome to Hooletown.
Why, thank you.
And you're welcome.
And, of course, in Hooletown, things get a little dicey sometimes, but not sure if we have room for all of these, but I want to tell you, you know, especially these days, everybody's worried about masks and everybody's worried about COVID and all that crap. And I saw a sign in front of a pub the other day and said, people must not cough near you. They must cough far away. If you hear someone coughing, tell them to far cough. Far cough. I like that. And also, you know, during the Middle Ages, they celebrated the end of the plague with wine and orgies. Hey, does anybody know if they have anything like that planned when this one ends? Okay. Final joke. A man walks into a watering hole with a large box, takes a seat at the bar. The bartender, curious, asks, what's in the box? The man says, I'll show you if you give me a free beer. So the bartender gets the man a beer. The man drinks the beer and then pulls out a minuscule little man and a matching piano. The little man promptly starts playing the little piano. Hey, that's pretty cool, the bartender says. Where'd you get that? The man says, I'll tell you if you get me another beer. So the bartender gives him another beer. The man drinks it. I got it from a genie in a lamp, he finally reveals. Fully invested now, the bartender says, you know, if you let me borrow that lamp, I'll give you another beer. Sure, the man answers. The bartender gets him another beer, and the man hands the bartender the lamp. The bartender rubs the lamp, and sure enough, a genie pops out. You are now my master, the genie announces. I will grant you one wish. What will it be? The bartender immediately says, I wish for $1,000,000. All of a sudden, 1,000,000 ducks start flying into the room. What the heck is this? Screams the bartender. Something to chase. I wish for $1,000,000, not 1,000,000 ducks. The man, still sitting at the bar, responds, do you really think I wish for a 12-inch pianist? Okay. Thanks, everybody. Hopefully, I will have Billy Wooten back next week. But thanks for putting up with these technical difficulties. God bless you all. We will see you later. Bye.